welcome back to another episode of Bias Check-In.
Hi everyone, welcome to our third Back to Basics. So Susie, what are we checking in with today?
Yes, this is our third Back to Basics episode, a monthly series where we summarize the roots of IO psychology. Last month, we told you about the first IO psychology PhD and the woman we owe Cheaper by the Dozen to, which, if you do recall, I did watch the second movie, and they lived in Chicago.
Aww.
So, even more full circle. And it wasn't like Lake Tahoe, it was a made-up lake, but they technically went up to Wisconsin.
Not everyone is perfect. It's okay.
Since the first motion studies, much has changed in our field and what we focus on. So we thought we would get you a quick up-to-speed episode to bridge the gap to modern-day research. For a short episode today, we will probably forget or gloss over some things. But let us know if you have other IO milestones and contributions.
And really, that should be easy. The early IO and applied psychology studies influenced so much of what we are now able to take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because it was still being defined as a field, a lot of topics that you wouldn't think about today were not off limits. So we fished up a few articles from Applied Psychology, the 1917 edition. And we can thank Applied Psychology research for pieces of literature such as The Legibility of the Phone Directory or Mental Tests of Unemployed Men. One of my favorite is The Attitude and Reaction of the Businessman to Psychology. Let us not be bothered by the fact that this article is 105 years old, still relevant. But others were a little bit more problematic. Among these, we see The Psychology of a Prodigious Child, How to Get Your Child a God Complex or Inferiority Complex 101. And some are definitely outdated. My favorite in terms of thank the higher powers you believe in, we got further titled The Moron as a War Problem. Dealing with individuals who tested low on IQ measures in the bellicum efforts of the early century. And while the problem might be real, the language could do and did with an upgrade. So at least we got that.
Yep.
Anything else from the list that we had that stood out to you?
A note on the German recruiting system definitely stands out in 1917.
In 1917? Yeah. Yeah, that one didn't age that well, did it?
But, okay, moving on, we have Harry Hollingworth, the OG consultant. Taught and gave guest lectures at the New York's Men Advertising League on the psychology of advertising. If you go back to our episode on persuasion,
he basically did teach Mad Men and advertising in New York a couple decades after his classes boomed so far. I mean, that's when we start getting the Ogilvies and like all of the different schools of thought on how to push consumerism down our throats. let's put it that way. he was ahead of his time. Very far ahead of his time.
Yeah. Early business and government were enthusiastic about IO, hired by Coca-Cola to persuade government that caffeine did not hurt people.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's also a very fun opener for your first IO lectures. I remember this from my first one, and then I got to do it myself, and I was so proud of it. Especially when you have a morning lecture.
Yes.
You can just open up with, hi, has anyone consumed caffeine today yet? And usually your students will think of, you know, like, oh, caffeine, the neurotransmitters, yada yada. Yeah, you can thank an IO for that. Moving on. Open your textbook.
Hollingworth included several conditions in his contract with Coca-Cola. Specifically, Hollingworth stated that Coca-Cola could not use the result of his research in its advertisements, nor could Hollingworth's name or that of Columbia University be used in these ads.
Also giving consultants very good basis and precedent for contracting rules. Aberforth.
Additionally, Hollingworth was free to publish the results of his research regardless of the outcome of the study. Very important. Very good. Furthermore, to reduce any questions about the integrity of his research, Hollingworth designed his three caffeine studies to include blind and double-blind conditions. We love double-blind. The scope and methodology employed in the studies have never before been seen applied to psychological research. Yeah. Had never... Yeah.
I've never been applied to psychological research. Which, again, it's crazy if you think about it. It's such a staple of, yeah, especially when you are going to work with a commercial partner trying to, like, prove such an applied study that clearly there's an interest to get the results going one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it should be a double blind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it should be random selection. Yeah, it's so intuitive now. It's like, well, guess it wasn't at some point. After Coca-Cola's contract, Coca-Cola, as you can imagine, we know how that trial ended. they were allowed to remain caffeinated and keep pushing caffeine in our sodas.
Thank you.
But thank you, Mr. Hollingworth. But he also skyrocketed among commercial companies. So he got to do research on all kind of topics as well. And man, he lived in the golden ages of IO because it was pretty much, oh, you see a person doing a thing? Someone probably wants to pay you to study that.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine. Like, such... The golden age, again.
What was it? Why do people chew gum?
Yeah, so at one point he managed to get an internal role that paid enough so that he stopped giving lectures. He moved away from applied research, which initially he had gotten into to pay the bills, like a lot of psych majors do with IO psychology. And a friend convinced him to get back into applied research to study how do people... Why do people chew chewing gum? I wasn't able to find the actual article. I'm sorry. I still don't know why people chew gum.
Damn it.
But someone studied it.
I just need to know why people chew gum with their mouth open.
Now that I don't want to think about. I really don't want that message. But other things that he studied were the value of auditory versus visual channels for advertisings.
Again, very important to his line of work.
Early 20th century, think of like television is just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
Print literacy is starting to go through the roof. Radios are a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about some of his other studies?
How to interview farmers. If you listened to last week's episode, we talked about daylight savings time.
You would need to interview farmers to find the only people that would be in favor of keeping it.
Mm-hmm. The effect of perfume on emotions.
Again, that subtle...
Neurotransmitters and... Yeah. The hours of the day when advertising was most effective. Going back to the line of work. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
The correct height... For workbenches.
That also has a little bit of motion studies vibes to it. Like, mm-hmm. there's the advertising, there's the persuasion, but there are still very focused industrial topics. Like, why do we chew gum? Why does a bench that's a little bit taller or a little bit shorter help?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to be in a cold room, in a warm room, more light, less light? I'm jumping ahead of myself with the Hawthorne studies.
Other articles include the best color for a railroad to paint its boxcars, the legibility of traffic signs, the differences in buying habits of men and women, and the selection of clerks, which I read about during my psychology and law class. That was really fun. Would you
look at that? But yeah. Again, Harry Hollingworth, thank you.
Thank
for
you.
For both caffeine, good contracting rules.
And great and getting, articles to read, really.
And getting the field started, yeah. Moving on from that, and like the last topic we touch on for this episode, if we want to keep it brief, again, we told you in the beginning there's so much more that we could touch on, but let us know, we'll talk about it next month. The other side of the equation that really helped IO psychology develop was getting IO psychologists to interact with the government.
Mm-hmm.
So where Hollingworth advocated for Coca-Cola in front of the courts, a lot of branches of the government and the military specifically in the 20th century realized that industrial psychologists, business psychologists could help understand how to make the army more effective and how to best take advantage of human resources.
Mm-hmm.
Once you go through two world conflicts and then some, you might want to make sure that your troops are equipped to the best. Mm-hmm. So Hollingworth actually conducted some studies on veterans returning from the world conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
But the other very important contribution that the army gave us were the alpha and army beta tests.
In our first Back to Basics episode, Science Practitioner Model, we did touch very, very slightly on army alpha and army beta, but tell us more.
So if you've ever heard someone say, oh my gosh, I'm such a type A, you can thank the army for it. What it initially was is simply saying if someone should go into being an officer or a normal cadet recruit. Mm-hmm. And really, at its very foundation, Army Alpha and Army Beta tests were more a literacy test.
Mm-hmm.
The Alpha test was written, and so required a basic literacy level, while the Army Beta test was based on pictures, and it was done for people who didn't have sufficient reading comprehension or English comprehension, like immigrants who had just gone to the country and then, in some of the worst timing ever, got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So what started with that then really was the foundation for personality studies.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere from Army Alpha to Myers-Briggs.
Yay. Go listen to our persona episode.
Casual little hook. And besides this, the other one that I hit on a little bit earlier was the Hawthorne studies.
Mm-hmm.
Named after Hawthorne, Illinois. So much IO in Illinois. Besides, you know, the letters in the actual name of the state. which were the first studies that somehow showed that worker emotions might matter.
Shocker.
Despite your sarcasm, that might still be groundbreaking for some managers to hear this in 2022. But
mm-hmm.
A funny thing about the Hawthorne studies is that I thought they were common knowledge in like any psychology classes because it's also part of research methods.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure your study conditions are as even and stable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently not. And one of my students was very offended that I expected pre-existing knowledge. And to be fair, maybe I could have been a little bit more subtle about it, but I was shocked that they didn't know it.
Yeah.
And boy, was I in for it. The student was very offended and wrote me a 20-page paper at the end of the semester in why she did not believe in the Hawthorne effects. Now, the word choice, believing in the Hawthorne effect,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I need to go down that rabbit hole, but you'll know what I'm about to say and what I would say. But yeah, that's another study that I don't think I will ever be allowed to forget about. Nope. And hopefully she won't either.
Trying to go against foundational pieces of a field is really funny to me.
Yeah, I mean, she did have she made an interesting point insofar that, you know, process has changed a lot, technology has changed a lot since then. So the theoretical argument, because we couldn't actually conduct the study, was that if it was done in 2020 or beyond, the results would have been very different, which I guess if someone wants to conduct that study, let us know. But yeah, interesting ways to go about it, for sure. I would like to see a physics students argue against gravity next.
I think that was a great exercise for her. One of my professors did do that, of like, take something that you really believe in and make the argument for the opposite side.
Okay.
So, great exercise.
I might use that next time.
There you go. But for this specific topic, maybe don't go against the foundations of
the human whole field. Behavior. Yeah. But,
you know, to each their own. But with that,
thank you for tuning in for our third Back to Basics. If you want to undermine any of our foundational studies, by all means, let us know by sending us an email with your references to biascheckin@gmail.com, or send us a link to the papers and the blog posts and all of that on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at biascheckinpodcast. Send us a voice note on anchor.fm. Support the continuation of the science by leaving us a tip. And we will talk to you next week.
See you in the next one.